Between point A, your eyes, and point B, the sharpest point of light, you'll see rays coming towards you. They may be thick, they may be thin, they will even be broken in the middle. That interval is the distance between the sun and your eye, the distance between your eyes and a candle, which has slipped into darkness about 20 feet away from you. Between the two points is an atmosphere. The spirit is flexible, it can travel 20 feet, or it can travel between the sun and your eye, many times faster than the speed of light. I think I understand you so far, I said, noticing the light reflecting off the chrome of the Volkswagen. As I drove, I listened to her, letting my mind concentrate on my driving yet at the same time flow with the images her words created. My eye continued to catch those reflections, while Rama said, in order to find your silver cord, you'll have to look for it in one of these reflections. It's the thinnest and the brightest. Many times you lose sight of it, which doesn't mean it's disappeared. It just means that you won't see it at that point. But you'll sense it, because you're part of this electric frequency between the light and your eye. Many times the reflections between the sunset and the eye have a bridge between them, a tiny cord that comes straight at you. It'll be the brightest and the thinnest ray of light. When you find it, you'll know it in your heart. Don't tell me, yes, I've found it, just to please me, because you'll be cheating yourself out of eternal life. It's something you must find yourself. No one can help you. This is the God inside you. Remember when they told you man is made in the image of God? All right, this is it. When you find the silver cord, you've found eternal life. All right, I said, let's see if I understand. When you look for the silver cord, you find something like a thread of light between your eye and the light-producing or reflecting object. Yes, in fact, some call it the golden thread instead of the silver cord. When I find it, what state will I be in, conscious or unconscious? Aha! That's a very good question. In order to find your silver cord, you must let your body go. It must be so relaxed that you go into a semi-trance. You need the same kind of concentration that goes into hypnotizing someone. I'm not going to hypnotize you, though. I gave you the directions. If you want to do it by yourself in the bathhouse, that's fine with me. You go in with your candle and find it. Then when you have it, you tell me and we'll take the next step. You mean sort of practice how to do it? Once you've got it, you'll be doing it automatically. It's like anything else in life: exercise, practice, drilling. This is the kind of practice your churches should have been teaching you when you were a child. Let me bring up an important point here, Rama. You remember Moses talking to Jehovah and telling him in the sixth commandment that having sex without marriage was a sin? According to that commandment, then, we committed a sin against God last night and are both going to hell for it, aren't we? I guess that's what they teach you in this miserable world of yours. Well, that's what I've learned from religion my whole life. I don't know why you've chosen me to write this book for you. I don't feel worthy of it. I'm a sinner. Well, what can I tell you? Can you try to make some sense out of this paradox that has created hang-ups about sex in lots of people on this planet? Every religion in the world tells you that fornication is bad. Okay, I guess what you're telling me is that if I speak in the name of Jesus, the Christ, that if I speak in the name of the same God of Moses, how is it we could have sinned and yet be good in the eyes of God? Good girl. I said, making fun of her. The Ten Commandments were given to Moses at a time when Jewish people had been slaves for ages. When those people came out of slavery, they were wild, like animals, with no conception of law and order. They were people without discipline, without cause. They had lost all hope. Therefore, Jehovah, the cosmonaut, decided to give them the Ten Commandments as a way of enforcing some laws and respect. In no way does Moses write about the sixth commandment as a way of saying that sex is bad. All he's saying is that if you want to have sex, you must secure something for the woman. It was a way to protect women, because in those days, women didn't know too much about women's liberation. What makes sex bad is the interpretation of individual religions, which has made sex dirty. These interpretations are a result of the way humanity in this world of yours has had the tendency to exploit sex, to make a business out of it. Women and sex were traded and used in negotiations like horses, flour, whiskey. Sick. Maybe you're right. I guess I shouldn't be ashamed of my avid interest in sex. No, you shouldn't be ashamed, because when you make love you do it for the pure joy and pleasure it gives you. You give yourself to the experience, you like the vibrations. It turns you on to see your women enjoying it. There's nothing dirty or bad about that. Then it's not a sin to be sexual. If it's done with the right spirit, it's a very soothing experience, something that makes your spirit vibrate at the right frequency. But Rama, I remember being told that you have to obey the Ten Commandments to save your soul or to go to heaven. Not anymore. Those commandments were given for a specific time in the life of the Jews, 3,000 years ago. You couldn't possibly live by them today. Jesus said nearly 2,000 years ago that in order to win the kingdom of eternal life, one must do only two things. What are they? Love God and love your fellow human beings. That way you understand God, you honor your parents, you don't kill anybody, you don't steal, don't bear false witness. I was punished as a child for even speaking about sex. So you can imagine how I feel about it. Now I do it very openly, but people get the wrong impression. But I never tried to hurt anybody. I always try to be sincere with the woman when it comes to the flesh. I sense that about you. That's why I chose to speak to you and why I want you to help us. Because there is no mean intent in you. Your intentions are clean and clear, even though you have this conflict within yourself about II sex. Well, what else do you expect with the type of upbringing I've had, the type of society of which I am a part? That's why I'm telling you these things about yourself. The reason you feel so nervous and uptight about all this is because you have been conditioned to feel that way. I'm telling you now, Chicho, you'll never make it back to LA this week. You'll have some complications associated with your work that will detain you. We probably won't see each other for a while until this is resolved, so I want to give you some homework. I want you to read two books in the Bible, and I mean read them thoroughly. One is Daniel, the other is the whole book of Revelations. I also want you to read the 21st chapter of Matthew, the whole chapter. After you take your out-of-body trip, you learn so quickly that we won't have to look things up in the Bible. You will make your own comparisons about what is going on now and what's going to be happening in the coming years. You will acquire plenty of knowledge by direct experience. I've enjoyed these little sessions with you, they've been very enlightening. So would you like to go into the water by yourself, relax, and try to find your silver cord? No, I'd like you to be there with me, to have your guidance if I'm going to go through with it. When we got to Akaya, we chose a pleasant spot to do our outdoor cooking. We had brought along the wok, a bottle of oil, some soy sauce and our fresh vegetables and lamb. We built a fire, cooked the meat in hot oil over the firewood and added the vegetables as the lamb simmered. Just before taking it off the heat, we added some onion. In less than an hour, we had put together our whole meal. We feasted on bread, wine, lamb, vegetables and, for dessert, fruit. That night, as I was making preparations for the drive back to Lima, Rana said she would spend the night with me again if I decided not to go back until morning. That settled, I washed the wok in the river and went up to the hotel to get the keys to the bathhouse. I was in no big rush to get back to Lima that night. I now had two things to look forward to, my first out-of-body experience and sleeping with Rana again. When we went to the bathhouse, we lit a candle in preparation for my astral projection. Rana kept reminding me that I would need to concentrate and that the candle's light was to be the focus of that concentration. The big moment was here. We undressed and got into the water. Rana kept touching me reassuringly as she looked at me with key penetrating eyes. "Gaze into the candle," she said. you're going to concentrate on the flame. Once you're completely relaxed, you'll see little reflections of light coming at you from several directions. In one of them, you'll see this bright red light, coming directly toward your eyes. You can't miss it, it's the brightest and thinnest ray. That's the silver cord. I was a bit nervous and couldn't concentrate very well at first. I began looking at the candle flame, squinting my eyes, opening and closing them, experimenting with the distortions this caused in the light. I saw reflections going in all directions, four main stems going up, down and to the sides. I kept doing it until suddenly I saw it. A bright thread. Excited, I kept looking at it until I was sure. Yes, I think I have it, I said. Keep doing it. Open your eyes, squint, open them again, and keep practicing until you can find this thread anytime you choose. Pay no attention to me, pretend I'm not here. Keep doing it, I'll tell you what the next step is. I practiced for nearly an hour before I got the hang of it, and was able to see the thread anytime I wanted to. When Rama saw how confident I was that I'd found the thread, she told me that next I was to learn to use my imagination, as the ability to create mental imagery was a vital aspect of astral travel. Now that you've found the thread, Rama said, you must follow it to the end of the light projection point, your candle, in this case. Follow this thread the way a spider follows its web. The energy of your eyes is going to travel along this silver cord until you're inside the wick of the candle. Once there, you'll see a lot of light. You'll see fire around you, as if you were standing on the wick. Except you won't have a physical body. Only your spirit will be there, your energy, your soul. Now practice that, then I'll tell you the next step. You want me to follow the thread to the wick of the candle? Try to imagine I'm really there, sitting at the center of the flame. That's it. That's exactly what you should do. You will be completely aware of sitting in the candle. You're going to see the light glowing around you, you're going to see through the fire, you're going to try to see me, see yourself, and this room will be the universe, the cosmos. Maybe you'll even see the reflection of your eyes as two distant stars. You'll see my eyes as two stars, because you're there, inside that candle, far away in proportion to what surrounds you. Okay, let me practice it, then I'll let you know. You must pretend I'm not here. Good luck. It was a little difficult for me to follow this thread to the end of the line. Somehow my nervousness, my distrust, my skepticism were in the way. Rama, sensing my feelings, came up behind me and put her arms around me. Relax, she said softly, keep concentrating on the light. You'll see what happens. I began imagining I was driving a car and that the road was the silver cord. Gradually, as Rama sat behind me, holding me between her legs in the water, I began to feel more at ease. Then it happened. I could no longer feel my body. My whole concentration and energy were inside the flame. It was as if an irresistible magnetic force pulled something out of me. The only awareness I had was of my spirit traveling along a smooth, completely illuminated road, suspended in total darkness. I had no sense of direction, north or south, up or down. The next thing I knew, I was sitting on top of the candle's wick, which seemed like a giant cable. I had become a part of the flame's energy. It seemed as if my awareness had reached the smallest point in the universe, yet I was awake, alert, and had absolute clarity of perception. I looked up and saw the flame tapering to a point, as it moved slowly away in huge, undulating particles. Looked out and saw nothing. It was dark, black, like staring into the night. Far away, at a great distance, I could see two tiny specks of light. I knew I was seeing my own eyes looking into the flame, reflecting the light of the candle. Couldn't see Rama nor her eyes. I saw only a large mass of something. Then I was awake, shouting to Rama, I did it. I was on the wick of that candle, I saw the fire around me, I saw the fire going up and the reflection of my pupils in the far distance, just as you said. but I couldn't see you, except for a big mass of something, like a conglomeration of tiny lights flickering in the darkness. That was the reflection of the water dripping from my hair, she said. Do you want to try it again? Ha ha. Do you really think I could? Sure, it'll be easier the second time. Try it. I tried it again, and again. 4 times to be exact. In the process, one candle burned down and I had to get out of the water to light another one. Once I had mastered traveling to the wick of the candle, which was becoming easier with each voyage, I began to notice certain things. I didn't seem to have any sensation other than sight. I was able to see things at a distance and all around me. I could see the wax of the candle, like white mountains melting in slow motion. When I got out of the water to light another candle, a pen fell out of my robe pocket. Rama said, "Can you transport your energy to the very tip of the pen as you did to the wick of the candle? Do the same thing, find you silver cord on the tip of that pen where the light is reflecting off the metal. You think you can do that? I'll give it a try." I successfully projected to the metal ring on the tip of the pen, which now looked like a huge telephone pole, about 10,000 times its normal size. I wasn't able to see the other, rubber-tipped end of the pen. I saw a long, yellow line that eventually disappeared into the universe. I could see the candle, source of great light, way above, at a distance. I could see Rama's and my eyes reflecting the candle light, like 4 big, bright stars shining in the endless black of an infinite night. I had no sensation of my physical body, only a consciousness of being on the tip of that pen. When I decided to get back to my body, I used the same process, pinpointing the source of light in my physical body as communicating with the light in the object I was inhabiting. The thread of light was the bridge between these two destination points. When I was back in my body, I said to Rama, "I did it again." I tried to explain to her the things I had seen during my astral outing. "That's what you're supposed to be seeing. You started traveling in a distance that's safe for you. It's best that you go only a limited distance right now. You traveled maybe 5 feet between here and the candle, maybe 5.5 feet between here and the pen. Little by little you're going to expand, and each time you will go a little further. Your perception expands and contracts in the cosmos. There's a lot of cosmos between your eyes and that stone over there. Why don't you try aiming for that?" This time I found a reflection on top of the stone, which was wet and reflecting light. I concentrated on the sharpest point of light, squinted my eyes, found the cord, but somehow it seemed broken. There wasn't a straight line between my eyes and the light's most intense reflection point. I told Rama I couldn't establish the line, that there was an interval in the thread, a disconnection. "When something like that happens," she said, "go to the very end of your silver cord. When it stops, continue traveling in the same direction. The silver cord makes itself invisible at times, but that doesn't mean it's not there. It's there. Sometimes you'll find the other half, sometimes you'll just continue moving into the cosmos." I practiced for a while, until I was able to project my thinking element to the wick of the candle, the tip of the pen, the rock, and to several other light-reflecting objects in the bathhouse. Because I was still unsure of myself, Rama asked me to go no further than the objects which were close by. I felt great. The experience had been different and exciting, like discovering a new toy. Yet it seemed as if, for the first time in my life, I'd found something meaningful, something that brought me a sense of peace. My main problem had been sustaining my concentration. Rama emphasized the importance of my practicing at least a week before we could begin traveling into the cosmos together. She said I should do it alone, when I was relaxed. "Eventually, you'll be able to do it at will, like any other normal bodily function," she said. We got dressed and went to the hotel restaurant where we had something hot to warm us up. I had many questions about what had happened and why Rama had chosen to guide me through this experience. "Rama, I would like you to tell me what you want from me. What do I have to do? What people do I have to see or contact? What do you mean by research? What kind of proof will my readers be given to support what I write, so this story is believable? Chicho, the purpose of this is not meant to be proving the existence of flying saucers. Our kingdom is not of this world. We don't want to interfere with anyone's beliefs or activities. What do I want from you? 2 full years of your life. 2 full years. Are you crazy? Who's going to finance me? How will I live? Who's going to pay for these 2 years? You will. I will. You're asking me to write something that may lead to my being ridiculed and humiliated, and on top of that, you're telling me I should pay for it myself. Is this like an investment or something? Not actually an investment. But as you go along, you'll keep a diary of your experiences while you're here with me, then research them, and when the time comes, almost 2 years from now, you should have the book ready. You make it sound so easy. Where do I start? Start with the circumstances and events that led to your being here. What about my personal life? What about your personal life? You know how it is out there, when people in power want to discredit someone, like in politics, they drag the skeletons out of the closet. They dig into your most intimate affairs, and before you know it, you're finished. What do you have to be afraid of? I had to stop for a moment and examine my conscience to find if there was something I had to be afraid of. I had never been convicted of any crimes, nor was involved with thieves, murderers, nor anyone associated with illegal activities. Before I had a chance to think any further, Ramu interrupted. See, there's nothing in your past life that can be brought up against you. What about the pending court case in California on July 15th? If I am held in contempt for not appearing for my assigned court date or worse if justice doesn't prevail over legality. I can understand how you feel, but as far as writing this message, I really don't care whose name goes on it. You can write it anonymously if you like. Remember, we're concerned only with getting the message delivered. How you present it, how you write it, it's your decision. You don't have to do it right this minute. We have 2 years. That is, if you have the strength. Why do you say that? Because I have the feeling at times that you'll want to let the whole thing drop. It's going to take great strength and courage to accomplish what you must do. So, why me then? Why not you, Chicho? I know you can do it. You have both strength and discipline. If there's anyone in this world who can get the job done, it's you. By the time you start writing, you'll have the wisdom, the knowledge, the faith. You'll be complete. Will this be a full-time job for me? No, you'll continue living your life. I'm not going to interfere with your activities in this world. But if I can give you a hand, you know I'll be happy to do so. I want you to be successful. When you understand the message yourself, then you'll make it. In Ezekiel, you can find a similar situation. The Ufonauts gave Ezekiel a book to eat. After eating it, they told him, "Okay, now fill your bowels with it, then go and speak to your people." They came here with a message, they chose this man, Ezekiel, to deliver it. He had his personal problems, too. But he was a good, sincere man. The same reasons why we've chosen you. Because you're sincere with yourself and we know you're the kind of person who will always act in good faith both in business and in your personal life. I laughed. Yes, I act in good faith. But I also have to pay rent and bills. For the past year and a half, you've been financing yourself because you knew that you could deliver for your Park and Madison Avenue corporations, right? Right. Supposed it doesn't work? Suppose you blow it? I'll be flat broke. I'll lose everything I have. Look, Chicho, wherever you go, you're well liked. Because you're a pleasant, enjoyable sort of individual, and you're a good businessman. You're industrious. Many times you've taken assignments for a movie studio that have taken you to nations all over the world. You've worked strictly freelance, never committed to one studio, to one company, always working with them, not for them. You're an excellent coordinator and a good contact man. That's really your job, isn't it?
Yes, yes, this is true.
So, mister, we're hiring you for 2 years because you're the kind of person we like to use to get our message to certain people on your planet. We'll sign no contracts because suing is unknown to you and me. This is a preparation period for you, a preparation for something beautiful that is coming to only a handful of people in this horrible world of yours. If you have a good reason for not taking this assignment, for not being a partner in this venture, let us know. But I think you can, and will, do it. We're going to give you all the help and encouragement you'll need to accomplish the task. In the meantime, we'll have a good time while we are here. As for your July 15th court appearance in Beverly Hills, you're just going to have to trust me when I tell you it's not going to happen. Please believe me, I'm a serious person with a mission to accomplish. We must have mutual respect and trust. If you still think I'm here to play games, I'm going to ask you once more to trust someone, to have faith. We're trying to gather people who have good faith, to guide them, and to get them to follow the teachings of a man who called himself the Son of God. Someone who understood God as the Force, a man who realized his cosmic duty on your planet. He will return to us soon. I ask you to read Daniel, the whole book of Revelations and the 24th chapter of Matthew so we'll have some common ground to understand each other. Okay, I'll remember that. But as for the 2 years, I can just continue my present lifestyle.
Yes, because I have the feeling you won't be coming here next weekend. You'll be traveling around Peru on business. Your supervisor will be here.
I still can't believe that. If it happens, will you have more faith in me? How do I know you're not an agent from some big company that has planned this whole thing? Come on, Chicho. What organization would be teaching you how to cultivate your spirit or show you how to control your soul after your body dies? Your spirit lives forever. If you don't die in a few years, you'll be one of the 144,000 who will be taken alive. Taken where? To another place. This I can't tell you as yet. As we go along, we're going to give you all the answers you want. Again, this is not meant to be any kind of proof. I'm not trying to prove anything. The only thing I'm trying to do is make the task easier for both of us. Your education will mainly concern the events that will be occurring between 1976 and the time when we take those 144,000 people somewhere. Could you give me some idea where?
Call it paradise.
Shangri-La. Utopia. Let's leave it at that. It's nothing to fear. I've never believed in the existence of such places. Your supervisor will be here on the 18th or thereabouts. Towards the end of this month, there's going to be some kind of political trouble in Lima. You'll have to be there to see what's happening, to report on it. It will be August before we'll see each other again. Take this time to practice the lessons you've already learned. It's going to be very easy for you to astral travel. Read the material I've assigned. The books of Daniel and Revelations and the 24th chapter of Matthew. Your Latin American supervisor will be leaving sometime around August 7th. As soon as you get the chance, come back here, so we can have a nice juicy chat. Look, there's no way my Latin American supervisor will be coming to this country at this time of year, I said, unconvinced. But who knows what will happen. As far as the political situation is concerned, the relationship between the United States and Peru hasn't been the greatest lately. If what you're telling me comes true, yes, that will give me a lot more faith in you.
Good.
We left the restaurant and went to my room. Rama mentioned that she would be happy to help me take care of the details on how I could finance the writing project. I was overjoyed she had the ability to read minds. It made communication much simpler. It amazed me that she had somehow known about my activities for the past 5 years, that I'd been freelancing for large movie corporations in various parts of the world, and about the kinds of problems I was having in my personal and business life. We had never discussed one aspect of my work in Peru, however.
Now that she'd asked me to let her know if I had a good reason for not being part of the assignment she was offering, I felt it was time to discuss this situation with her. It was one of the reasons I was so reluctant to get involved with her mission.